Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show.
Yeah, good evening.
Excuse me, I'm Lila and I have a cold.
She's got a cold. But it looks like we're not streaming again.
You call in too late.
Well, it doesn't matter. We're not streaming. So, if everybody will hold on, I'm sure you will. Maybe.
Should call earlier.
Really burns my buns.
Well, and make a call earlier.
There we go. We're live now, and we are streaming. That's good. So, I want to thank everybody for joining us. I'm sure you caught the early rendition of Lila's cough and heckle, but we are here tonight and on tape. Now, tonight we've got two interviews, so we're going to be brief, and we're going to be doing an interview with Kevin Cease, who's attorney for VoterForPeace.us, and
very knowledgeable guy.
Yeah, and we talked to him about he represents 200 organizations that are seeking the disbarment of Bush torture attorneys and indictments for Bush regime officials. I'm reading that right off our description of the show here.
And what he's doing is he's bringing a case before the Bar Association to have these guys disbarred.
Oh, there's 12 of them, yeah. 12 guys that involved in this torture mess and the Bush administration, including Gonzalez. And we're going to talk about that. And our second interview is with Graham and Barbara Dean. They're activists and singer-songwriters, and they perform. God, Lila's got a wicked cold tonight, and she's kind of hoarse, so she won't be talking too much, but we've got they perform a song entitled Tom Paine's Bones, and we discuss the Obama presidency and so on. But I hope you'll enjoy them. They're very, very, very good, very nice people.
A lot of fun.
And great singers. And we want to, we'll start that. Actually, it's going to be a full hour, so we're going to kind of leave right to that.
So which interview are you going to do first?
Well, I'm going to do Kevin, and then we'll go right to Barbara and Graham Dean afterwards.
Good plan.
Since that was the order. And this was last night's program. These were recorded last night, so we will be doing that. So please bear with us a second, and we are going to begin the show with Kevin Cease. C-E-E-E-C-E-E-S-E. And hang on one second. Begin. Just get this segment here on the... where we start to talk with him. Okay. So we will begin. So I hope you enjoy this, and I'll be back.
Find it informative.
Yeah, I'll be back right after Kevin's talk, and then we'll... go right into Barbara and Graham Dean. So I hope you enjoy this. Well, that was quite the end of the show there.
Hi, hey,
welcome
and,
to the show.
We're sorry that it took so long. We had a little phone problems here. But we're on the line with Kevin Cease. And can you hear us, Kevin?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you hear us? All right. Thank
you. We had a little rough time getting a hold of you, but now everything's okay. I guess you have quite a project in front of you. You're coordinating the efforts of 200 organizations.
Yeah. What is the entire deal here, Kevin? Who are your backers, and how did you get involved with this?
Well, we basically, I had a group called Voters for Peace, VotersForPeace.us. I'm on the board of VelvetRevolution.us. And we decided that because the Congress and White House was unable to act on this very important issue of torture, that we had to do something. That the vice grip because of in Washington, because of Congress being briefed 40 times, because of... the Attorney General having been involved in rendition when he was with the Clinton administration, because of Obama, you know, not prosecuting torturers, not releasing pictures of torture, and appointing General McChrystal to head Afghanistan despite his involvement in the torture, that Washington, D.C. is not able to handle this. So we wanted to start this ball rolling and start to apply the rule of law in order to cleanse this toxicity out of the body politic. And we thought lawyers who had used their legal license to provide cover for war crimes should not have legal licenses. And I think it's a pretty low standard of ethics to not allow people to continue to have a legal license if they use that license in order to provide cover for torture.
I agree with you 100% on that, yeah.
So how are you going about charging them?
Well, what we did was we filed complaints against 12 of the Bush-Cheney lawyers, Department of Justice, Department of Defense, and the White House lawyers who were involved in torture. We filed complaints with the bar councils in primarily Washington, D.C., but also a few other states, seeking their disbarment. And we are looking at another dozen or so lawyers from the CIA and the White House and Department of Justice who are probably equally deserving, and we may be doing a second round of complaints against those people. And then what happens is the Bar Association has an ethics process where they do an internal review, and we provide them with 600 pages of exhibits for them to review. We do an internal review that they then reach a conclusion on whether or not to discipline the attorney, and we ask that the discipline be that they lose their license to practice law, to get disbarred. If that happens, then they'll be, if the lawyers want, they can fight that and have public hearings. And if we, that'll be a great opportunity to get more facts out. At the same time we're doing this, we're also, votersforpeace.us is also pressuring the Congress to hold hearings and pressuring the Attorney General and the White House to appoint a special prosecutor. We really think that we have to take this out of the hands of the Congress and the White House and out of partisan politics. Pick a credible prosecutor with good experience who people will trust to do a solid job of gathering the facts and applying the law without regard to politics. There may be people from both parties involved, maybe people just from one party. We don't know. But we think that the rule of law is the key. And so we, through votersforpeace.us, we're encouraging people to get active and push everyone for that end result, which is a special prosecutor.
Mm-hmm. Now, will the government defend each of these people that you've accused for them in front of the Bar Association?
That's a really good question. That's the first time I've been asked it. I'm not sure the answer. My guess is that they're actually going to defend themselves.
Oh, okay.
They'll hire their own counsel to defend them. Most of these folks are no longer in the government. The next round, there may be some who are in the government. But most of these people are no longer in the government, and I think they'll probably defend themselves.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that it took Valerie Plame, Scooter Libby, it took him 2 years or 3 years before they were able to get him. All he did was leak a name, all right. With these guys, they were the cause for this war, the cause for this torture, and nobody's even indicting them. Nobody's even going after them. You know, except you, and doesn't it amaze you that this thing hasn't gone any further than this in all of these 8 years?
It does disappoint me. I think President Obama made a mistake in not holding torturers accountable. Former President Carter said something very similar yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He was critical of Obama for not holding people accountable. In fact, the more I look at this, as we research this, the more it became clear to me that the torture program would not have happened except for the lawyers who provided legal cover.
That's right.
There's enough
That's right.
dissension in both the CIA and the Department of Defense. There are people who said, no, this is wrong, this is illegal, we can't do this.
Right.
That it would not have gone forward without these lawyers providing legal cover. So these guys were a critical part, a critical linchpin.
Yeah,
we do know that some torture evidence gathered from torture, got into the speech that Colin Powell made before the UN, including the comments that al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were linked. That came from someone who was tortured in Egypt. He was renditioned to Egypt.
That's correct.
He was renditioned to Libya, and he just died, supposedly killed.
I read this. Curveball. Yeah, the Curveball was his CIA name.
That was one of the misinformation people were getting from. That's right.
That's right.
So there's a lot of misinformation out there. And then, you know, it was interesting also when you look at some of the Senate report on this talked about how the questions that were asked of the torture victims were more about the link between Saddam and Al-Qaeda than they were, and what was the mass destruction, than they were about actually preventing further attacks.
What did you think about Cheney's remarks today?
Cheney is really interesting to watch. He's like a criminal returning to the scene of the crime, trying to throw the investigators off.
Mm-hmm.
Today he's saying that there was no link, no proven evidence between the link between Iraq and 9/11 was interesting. And also I thought his comments, he's no longer saying it's a torture program, but the interrogation program that produced useful information, so he's changing his view on that. He's really, I think, almost looking like someone who's afraid he's going to get prosecuted. And it may be that all of his talk may come back to haunt him. He should be careful because he may find himself creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm not sure there's the stomach to really prosecute the vice president or anyone else in the White House. But if he keeps talking, there might be.
I definitely think that it's going to happen. I don't know. Last week was when Curveball killed himself, right?
Right.
So, and for those of you who don't know who Curveball was, he was the guy, the tortured informant, who was tortured in a Libyan prison by Muammar Gaddafi, and gave this information to saying that there was this connection and this link when actually it wasn't. And the poor guy, that article, I don't remember if we read this on the air or not, but I remember reading it, was that he actually was, the International Red Cross actually saw him in the prison, and he refused to give him an interview. And then a week later, he killed himself.
Wow.
Yeah,
the Red Cross is a very important institution in all this.
We have
as part of the evidence that we provided to the bar associations,
report on torture. But Curveball told them, "Where were you when I was being tortured?" You know,
yeah.
And he refused to talk to them.
Well,
and
you can't blame him. The way he was treated.
But he was pretty much out of his mind at that point anyway, and then supposedly killed himself.
Terrible.
But chances are, you know, killing yourself in a Libyan jail, I guess, is like, that's what they say you did, you know? But maybe,
who knows? Unfortunately, probably something we'll never know.
Maybe he did want to talk to them, and they refused, and, before he talked, they killed him. You know, which would make sense because he was the one that would have given away this whole thing. But now Cheney's coming out ahead of everybody saying, oh, yeah, there wasn't any link. But he was the same guy that said that they gave all kinds of relevant information and saved lives and all kinds of stuff. Now he's saying there was no link. So, he's...
Well, he may be beginning to unravel. He's an evil man.
I mean, the self-fulfilling prophecy aspect of this, the more he talks, he may be trying to clean up the scene of the crime, but he may actually be doing the opposite.
That's right.
He seems very paranoid.
Yeah, and you know another culprit that I hope gets his dues is Rumsfeld. Where is that jerk hanging out? You know, but I heard that he was hanging out in the Pentagon still. You know, and he's still there doing some counseling. All right, but they got to go after this dirt. This guy is a major dirtbag. You know.
Well, the guy who said that the Geneva Accords were a quaint relic of history. The Geneva Accords is something the United States led to have put in place to prevent war crimes and torture.
Right.
And here we are doing the opposite.
I mean, these guys. I Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld.
Wolfowitz,
right? All of these guys, all the neocons, every single one of them. Okay, and you got neocons sitting in Obama's advisory cabinet now. All right, they never left. All right, and you know it's a sick, incestuous situation here. And I don't know when they're going to get. I mean, what can we do?
Today, Obama appointed Congressman McDonough from New York as the head of the Army. He's a Republican who's been on the Armed Services Committee for 14 years, a supporter of the wars, supporter of a bigger military budget. Now he's been, Obama's appointed him, this Republican right-wing conservative, Christian conservative, in fact, who gets a very high rating from the Christian groups. He's now going to be heading the Army for Obama. So it's a pretty
Yeah, I mean, it's, why are they choosing this bum? I mean, what's his?
The credit? American foreign policy never changes, Leo. It doesn't matter who the president
but
is.
But a Republican?
It's the same policy.
Come on. I mean, a Republican?
But, yeah, the American foreign policy is deeply entrenched. We are on a very clear course, and we spent a lot of money to try to get the Russians out of Afghanistan. We tried to spend a lot of money to get the Taliban to support us and walking over to Houston to talk about oil deals, and they didn't work out.
Right.
Now we're at war with them, and we're going to make sure that we get control of that region of the world. It's an American empire that does it based on power of the dollar, which is getting weaker, and power of the military, which is stretched thin. So we may be at the last phases of this American empire. So even though Obama's not changing his policy, we may actually see this policy begin to unravel on its own because it's become so burdensome for our budget and so exhausting for the military.
Right. And all you got to do
is. And so evil.
And all you got to do is pull out. Just pull out of everything.
It's an evil policy.
Yeah.
It's caused mayhem and destruction worldwide.
That's right. And if people know the history of U.S. foreign policy, they'll understand why 9/11 happened. I mean, they know the history of our policy to Iran when Mossadegh in 1953 was a coup d'etat led by, in fact, a grandson of Teddy Roosevelt, but led a coup d'etat to remove the democratically elected president of Iran because he wanted to keep the oil profits for his own people. And because of that, they removed him and put the Shah of Iran in place. The Shah of Iran became a brutal dictator who we trained and tortured, who we provided weapons to, who was an abusive dictator with a very strong secret police. And he was toppled in 1979 by the Iranian Revolution and the Muslim extremist clerics who now control that government. So in many respects, it's the abusive U.S. foreign policy that has led to this result. If it hadn't been for Muslims, imagine how different the Middle East would have been.
But hold it.
As a leader, and he had a democratic Iran that kept the money for his people. What a difference the world would be.
No, I agree with you there, but I got to tell you, I take issue on you with the 9/11 issue. That, to me, there's no doubt. I mean, with all of the mountains and mountains of evidence.
Oh, there's a lot of good questions there.
Cheney is on record stating to NORAD to stand down.
I know.
I mean, come on. How the hell much more evidence do you need than that to put this guy away?
9/11. I mean, the point is there is a Muslim extremist faction that hates the United States.
Who the hell cares? It's a total useless joke. I mean, it's a false flag operation put up by Mossad, okay, put up by the United States, okay, and just so that they can have some reason to go after the oil reserves, to go into the Middle East. That's what they needed. This thing is so blatantly obvious, all right, and mountains of scholastic evidence, okay, and forensic evidence, okay, to prove that this thing was done by us.
Explosive material found in the...
Thermite, for crying out loud. I mean, that's where the hell are the couple of, the most incredible evidence, okay, is that none other than Marvin Bush, the unknown brother of the little known brother of George Bush, was in control of the electronic security of the World Trade Center for years and on the board of directors, okay? All right? I mean, here's a guy that had the keys, you know, and everybody was aware. I mean, the police, and everyone who was there, all the first responders heard these things go off like bang, 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 bang. All of these explosions going off at the same time. It was professionally demolished. Okay, there was no damn planes. I mean, the planes went in, but big whoop. Okay. Those were considered drones. Those were, but the evidence of those things, there's so much evidence pointing to this by so many people that, you know, for anybody to still believe that Bush and Cheney were not responsible for this and Rumsfeld and all the other damn neocons, all right, just read Wolfowitz's book, all right, what they needed was a new Pearl Harbor, and it happened, all right. And this is what they got. And look what happened. The Patriot Act, you know, war in the Middle East, war in Afghanistan, war in Iraq.
You know, Patriot Act, you also should don't forget the whole anthrax situation.
Yeah.
Remember just before the vote, the leader, the majority leader of the Senate and the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Pat Leahy and Tom Daschle, were faced with anthrax, which obviously was manufactured. And in the U.S., the really only ones you can make anthrax for the quality that was found.
I tell you, we have been on the air for 6 years, right, on commercial broadcasting air, and we have not been wrong on any of these issues, okay, since the beginning, on Bush, on Cheney, on the war. We were on 3 weeks before the invasion of Iraq, okay, yelling at the top of our lungs that these guys were crooks and that this thing was wrong and that it was false. Now, 6 years later, oh, we've vindicated, okay, even Cheney comes out, you know, and everybody realizes this invasion was for nothing, absolutely nothing. Okay?
All those lives lost.
And we didn't gain a damn thing over there. We didn't even gain the oil. We didn't get anything over there yet, you know. It'll probably all be blown up by Israel before it's over, you know, between Iran and Israel. So it's like, you know, and for us to be supporting Israel for any reason, I mean, it's a Marxist-Leninist insane state led by a bunch of crazies, all right, who are willing to blow up the world for a religion. Okay, they think that, you know,
It's not for their religion. They're Zionists. Don't mix that up. That's nothing to do with the Jewish religion at all. It's Zionism.
I'd say Israel is destroying Jewish religion in the fact.
Yeah.
The social movement of the Jews has been very important to making progress in the United States and other places.
You bet.
And Israel is really destroying that.
They're destroying our foreign policy. They're destroying our government. I mean, they're bleeding us. I mean, billions upon billions of dollars every year to our foreign aid to that country. Okay, so they can slaughter Palestinians. You know what I mean? It's like, come on. Well, I mean, why in the hell are people waking up to this? I don't understand.
People are waking up, but you know what the problem is with every issue in the United States, there are entrenched interests that profit from the status quo, and that is the military-industrial complex that President Eisenhower warned us about in 1961.
That's
is
right.
Very real and very powerful. It's now the military-industrial intelligence complex, and you know, then at home we have Wall Street, the bankers controlling so much of the Senate's activities when it comes to finance. We have the health insurance industry controlling the failed health policy. We have the coal, the corn, and oil industries, keeping us on the oil and carbon-based fuels rather than moving toward the solar, wind, and
right, right.
Thermal. I mean, so all these entrenched interests are preventing us from putting in place policies that work.
All he's doing is flapping his gums, basically, and shining his teeth. I mean, that is all that he's doing. I mean, other than bankrupting us and throwing us into a greater war, all right, and keeping the same Bush policy.
And transferring wealth
from the working people of the United States
to the bankers.
All he's done is
a Wall Street Democrat and a traditional U.S. Empire foreign policy kind of guy.
All he's done is put a black face on George W. Bush. That's about it. All right. Everything else is. Bush was the guy who came up with this a bailout plan to begin with, and Obama just went along with it. Okay, and added another $1 trillion to it, or $2 trillion to it. All right. He wanted war in Iraq. Okay. And what did he do? Oh, more war in Iraq. Now we got war in Pakistan, and we got war in Afghanistan, even greater. And we got another 10-year commitment there.
Last week, when the deadline came for the U.S. troops to get out of cities, and rather than get out of cities, they just changed the boundaries of the cities. They just leave the forts where they were.
Yeah, right.
They didn't have to move. They just changed the boundaries.
The whole thing is just a fraud.
Is that a fraud.
Yeah, jeez.
But I do have to say I'm really pleased to hear about your pursuit
and I'm glad that you're moving to try to do something
that's real.
Now,
get a good judgment against these lawyers.
Yeah, and if anybody
what do you think the possibility is of coming out and getting the kind of judgment that you want?
I really got to take people getting organized. If nothing is going to happen on any of these issues unless people demand it. I mean, these are the most blatant issues, whether it's health care, whether it's war, whether it's torture. We need to have people standing up, and that's why we're trying to do that through VotersForPeace.us. If you go to our website, VotersForPeace.us, there's an obvious icon of the torture. You say you want to get involved in that issue, click it on, you go for it.
Voters for Peace. What was it again? Voters for
VotersForPeace.us.
.us. Okay. Velvet Revolution.
We update the site every day with lots of news stories, and so it's a great source of information about what's going on around the world. And we do the same thing on our economic site, ProsperityAgenda.us. That deals with healthcare and the economy and the bailout and all that stuff. So ProsperityAgenda.us is our domestic work, and VotersForPeace.us. We really do our foreign policy work. So check out that. And we're trying to get people to take action on all these issues, because that's what it's going to take to turn this country around. If we don't do something, and I appreciate you all doing the radio, so that's doing something, because the media is a big part of the problem. But if we don't do something as citizens, we are going to not get what we want out of this country and about what we want for the future for our kids and everybody else.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Kevin. And if anybody wants to get to, do you want to give out a phone number? You want to give out a, other than your voters?
The website is votersforpeace.us, and the phone number is 443-708-8360. That's 443-708-8360.
And you can help. We can help by sending them a check or, you know, supporting them in whatever way you can.
Money is always tight. We use our money very carefully.
I'm sure. And, we want to keep following you, and we wish you the best, and we hope to get updates from you and put you on again in the very near future. So you got anything pending there or anything we should know about that's coming up for you?
Well, you know, we're going to be doing another round of complaints against torture lawyers, and we'll be continuing on the White House and Department of Justice. We'll also be adding people from the CIA. And actually, my hope is that we'll find somebody who is afraid of being challenged like this to come forward and start to tell the truth. What really happened? Who was behind it? What was the plan? We need a John Dean to get on the right side of the law and start to, you know, correct the mistake that's been made by telling the truth. And that's
right.
My hope is that we'll find that kind of person through this process as they come to recognize that the best thing for them and the best thing that they can do for the country is to tell the truth about who's behind this torture plan, what the plan was, and whether the legal memos were essentially designed to tell the boss what they wanted to hear, which was, don't worry about the Geneva Convention, don't worry about the Convention against Torture, don't worry about the federal statutes against torture, don't worry about the federal statutes against war crimes, don't worry about the Army Field Manual, none of that matters, you can go ahead and torture. And we want someone to come forward and say, that was obviously a false a set of legal principles
and everybody knew. Everybody knows that Cheney was cherry-picking the intelligence. And everybody knows that. That's been knowledge since that's been out for the last 8 years, 10 years, you know. So nobody doubts that.
Just by giving it a new name called enhanced interrogation doesn't mean that it's not torture.
Totally insane.
Yeah.
And then President Obama, you know, has taken to the next step, which is he's going to keep these people from Guantanamo in prison indefinitely at a trial.
Yeah.
Why? Because they were tortured. That way, any evidence that was gathered would be thrown out. So he's not going to, he can't bring the court to trial.
Right. He's
hold them without a trial. Now, how is that? What happened to the rule of law?
Oh, man. Listen, we got to have you back. I got to let you go, but I want to thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for being on, Kevin, and please, everybody, go to the votersforpeace.us and help Kevin out, help him prosecute here. We got to get some action going.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. And that was Kevin Ceese, and he was he's the attorney who's trying to get this thing working, and hopefully we can get these guys on trial very, very soon. And Lila, if you can sing a tune, I'm going to.
Yeah, I want to break in here. We're going to go to the next interview that we did with Barbara and Graham Dean. And we're friends of Lila's and I. We've known them quite some time.
and they're activists and fascinating people. I hope you'll enjoy them, and very, very good singers and songwriters, and we will put them on right now. So hope you enjoy. This is about a half an hour, so this will take us to the end of the show. So have a good evening. I hope you enjoy this CD. And let's see, I'm going to put that song on now. Well, I'm going to move this up a little bit.
Joey.
Tom Payne and his blues, and that one was
Tom Paine.
Here's the Tom Paine.
By Steve Kilston.
Yeah, okay. And that was Barbara O'Dean, and Graham's all set up with his guitar, so we're going to have a little live music here tonight, too, which is pretty cool. So and I guess you got one more Tom Paine song that you wrote, right? That's not yet on the album?
That's right. That's right. We didn't write it. This was written by someone named Graham Moore. It's called Tom Paine's Bones, and we're going to be singing both of these songs, as well as maybe one or two others, at the a commemoration of the 200th anniversary of Thomas Paine's death in New York City. He died in Greenwich Village on June 8th, 1809. So there will be events all this coming weekend in and around New York City commemorating that.
Oh, good. Okay. So I don't know if you want to, if Graham wants to start that or not, or you want to just talk a little bit before we go, or what? I know you guys are really involved with activism, and you're of a liberal bent, and we appreciate that here. But you expressed some disappointment with Obama's policies recently, as we have. And what do you guys think of the coming apocalypse?
Good heavens!
Obama-lips, or whatever. What do you think is going on here?
This is Graham. Hi, folks.
Yeah.
I'm choosing to still be hopeful. But as you say, that many of the decisions so far have been disappointing. We have to remember, I think, he has so many pressures on him.
Well.
And Washington is a bubble. It is not at all connected to the rest of the USA.
Maybe you're right in that. I agree. But boy, I'll tell you, I bubble or not, Graham, to me, it's like we put them there, you know, and they're constantly deceiving us. They're constantly lying to us. They're constantly doing what they not supposed to do, you know.
But as long as
he's been in office 4 months, Liam.
Four months.
I know. Okay. I know. So what?
You know the
corruption that exists there.
I got to tell you though, that's true. Bush did nothing for the first 4 months. He was on vacation, if you remember right.
Well, he was on vacation for a large part of his eight years.
Yeah, it's true. So
I wish it had been longer.
Nobody's done more than maybe Roosevelt was the only guy who ever did any more in the first 4 months of his presidency.
Right. But I think...
Scary guy. He's just a scary guy to me. I don't know. He's just... everything he does...
Absolutely is. And there is a mystique and a charisma. And what we have to be careful of is that we don't get sucked into that charismatic side and ignore what is really happening.
I agree with you.
And, you know, that was never a danger with Bush.
Charisma.
Charisma was
one of his problems.
I'm sure he couldn't spell it. Probably didn't know what it meant. But
and certainly didn't have it.
He didn't have it. Obama is very personable, very charismatic, and will, if we allow him, be able to get away with a whole load of things. And I think that's what I was going to say. It's really it's up to us.
Yeah.
We're the ones who have to hold his feet to the fire.
I agree.
And if we don't do that en masse, we're going to get what we deserve.
Well, what did you get a chance to hear Kevin Cease, the attorney?
We could hear a little bit as we were coming down, but
I was trying to read some stuff about Paine. I didn't. What was he saying?
Well, he's the lead attorney for a group, 200 groups actually around the country who he's the lead attorney and has filed suit and is trying to get.
It's before the Bar Association.
Oh, before the Bar. So trying to get all of these 12 attorneys disbarred, all right, the torture attorneys, all right, as well as trying to open up these cases against them, as well as Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld.
Fantastic.
And Wolfowitz and all of these people.
Yeah.
so that you know that we can you know that, that this stuff comes out, as well as to release the torture pictures, as
right.
well as to you know full disclosure here.
Right.
And like Graham said, keep you know his feet to the fire.
Right.
And I,
because boy, he has just become one. I mean, one disappointment after another here.
But I'm still. Willing at 4 months, I'm still willing to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, knowing the pressures, knowing the corruption that's up there. I just don't think that even if he wanted to, he could suddenly do a 180-degree turn from what this government has been for decades and decades and decades up there in Washington. I just don't think he can. I think it's going to have to be more gradual. That is my personal opinion. I am disappointed, but I'm still willing to cut him a little slack right now. That doesn't mean not to put pressure on him. I think we all should be, you know, talking as much as we can and getting out into the streets, too.
I think the guy should have pulled out of Iraq as soon as he came in.
Well, of course.
You know, there's no need to be there anymore. I think he should have, you know, if we had to surge in Afghanistan, you know, I think putting all of our efforts now into Pakistan, I mean, these are the guys with the bombs, all right, and Taliban, I mean, that's a scary situation there,
mm-hmm.
all right? But again, is it our war?
Well, exactly.
No, it's not our war.
Right.
It's Pakistan-India's war. They're the guys that got to worry about,
I think,
about it. Afghanistan's got to worry about it.
Right.
If they want, you know, I have a tendency to believe in what Ron Paul says about the Constitution. We don't have any right to be there. We never did.
No,
okay? It's not constitutional. It's an unconstitutional war,
right.
unconstitutional policy that we have a foreign policy to be this empire building and interventionists,
exactly.
and preemptive wars and all this other crap. I mean, we have absolutely no right being there.
Exactly, and illegal in also in the sense that war was never declared by Congress, and that is actually their constitutional duty.
And now look at this.
Now
look at this other farce, you know, the South Korean and North Korean conflict here that we're going back into. That was an undeclared war. That was a police action. And yet we still have, how many years now? 50 years
50
later?
Years. But
you know,
I think...
We still got 50,000 men over there. You know, it's like, come on.
I think one thing we need to do is to teach history a whole lot better than we do.
Okay.
Try to teach history, to try to educate people on history. If anybody had even a remote idea of the history of other parts of the world, they would know that nobody has ever conquered that northern part of Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And Afghanistan.
The great British Empire in the late part of the 19th century... The British Empire tried twice, and both times they were driven out. And this was one of the greatest empire of its time. So that area, plus that line that is drawn across there, which separates Afghanistan and Pakistan, is an artificial line, as are most national boundaries. And the Pashtuns are on either side. The people on either side of that line are related to each other. They are not separate things. If we knew anything about Iraq, we would know exactly the same thing. No, Iraq is an artificial creation, created after the First World War. In 1920, the British again tried to go in there. In 1928, they were kicked out on their butts. And nobody has ever conquered that area. We just have no historical understanding.
Our memory
of our own history and of the history of other people.
No, I mean the British tried during the Crusades, you know, and they made it for a while until they got really mad and kicked the British out again. We just don't seem to get it.
Right.
When we refuse to get it, we refuse to believe that these are equal and powerful and unique people, all right, that deserve the respect of self-sovereignty and government, and we're a remarkable civilization.
absolutely remarkable civilization.
Right.
These guys had hospitals. These guys had medicines. While we were while the West was still primitive. Okay.
Exactly.
You know, just come on.
The leaders of empires never get it because they don't want to get it. They want to get the resources. They don't care what happened in history. They're going to get in there and get whatever resources they can, namely oil now.
But it's enslaved these countries.
And that's what they do.
Who invented algebra? The Arabs, right?
Right, and while Europe was in the Dark Ages,
yep.
Who was keeping learning alive?
Mm-hmm.
The Arabs,
right.
The Arabian.
You know,
yeah.
Europe was in the grip of the Dark Ages,
mm-hmm.
And the Arabs' learning flourished.
Yeah.
And
through their universities,
right.
And they also remember their influence on Europe for centuries.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, this is not something that George Bush was aware of or cared at all about.
Yes,
that's right.
But, you know, there is just so much we do not understand.
Oh, yeah, and revisionist history is
a huge issue.
Is everywhere. I mean, that's what it is. It's written by the West, you know,
mm-hmm.
and pushed down the throats of the world. And that's the way it is. Oh, okay. Lila wants to hear your song.
Oh, how nice.
And that's okay. But I know you did. I was going to ask you about Tom Paine because that is essentially where you guys are going to,
right.
What the story is. And you might want to give us just a little bit of background on Tom Paine before you sing that song.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I know you prepared for this. And Tom Paine, for those of you who may or may not know American history, he was the guy that wrote Common Sense and started the revolution, basically, in words, and was quite the fellow. And I'll let Barbara give us a little background on Tom.
Well, it's true. He came to America in 1775, and basically a few months later, had published Common Sense on January 10th, 1776, and the Second Continental Congress was really, at that point, still undecided as to whether they were going to declare independence or just what they were going to do about their problems with Britain and with the king, and they basically wanted to extend an olive branch and, you know, ask, please, you know, could we have some concessions here, and, you know, we'll still be good subjects of yours. And with the publication of Common Sense, which really, it really called out the monarchy, and it really encouraged people to look upon themselves as important individuals. He had a lot of, you know, funny things to say about what he called kings, rascals, and a lot worse than that. And Common Sense was a pamphlet. It was a 46-page pamphlet. It was as widely read in its time as Harry Potter has been in this time.
What was they? There were 13 colonies. I'm trying to think how many people. 6 or 7?
5 million?
I think it was about 5 million.
Okay. 5 million. In the first 3 months, he sold 120,000 copies.
Amazing.
And within a year, it sold 500,000 copies.
Mm. And
people forget how literate. Okay, the early colonists were
exactly.
Very literate people.
That's
and
very true.
You know, the Puritans and all of them. They were highly literate people. I mean, and some of these people had enormous libraries. Like I think it was with Jefferson had 10,000-15,000 books in his library. I mean, he opened up the University of Virginia. You know,
common people, common person,
were
literate people,
right.
And this is a good point about Common Sense was that he deliberately wrote it in a style such that the common person
could understand it.
He didn't use Latin or highbrow language. Although if we read it today,
it's not that
really, it's not that easy to read. It is fairly sophisticated by today's standards.
That's true.
But still very readable, very understandable.
But, you know, when you figure the average newspaper is fifth grade level,
yeah.
Mm. That's what they write for.
Wow.
That's kind of like, okay. You know,
no, he didn't do that. That he did not do. Not fifth grade.
But,
and, of course, each of those pamphlets that was sold was read to, you know, possibly 100 or more people because they would stand around and read to each other. They
yeah.
would, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And the thing that it succeeded in doing was uniting the colonies. The colonies were, in many senses, at that point, separate. You know, Virginia didn't necessarily feel a connection to Massachusetts.
Right.
And through common sense, they began to come together and realize that they did have a common goal to work towards, which was independence.
Mm.
And it was published January 10th, 1776, when the Continental Congress met again later in 1776.
That was when they declared independence.
Was declared.
Right. And largely because of that. You know, if it's okay with you, I wanted to read a resolution from the Massachusetts General Court recognizing Thomas Paine in the year of the 200th anniversary of his death, if that's okay, because
yeah.
it says quite a bit in a short space about who he was.
Okay.
And I don't think Massachusetts is the only state that has done this, but I'm not sure how many others have. Whereas Thomas Paine was a principal leader in America for independence and equal rights, was the peer of George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, James Madison, James Monroe, was one of the founding inspirers of the United States of America, and whereas in his classic and influential essay, Common Sense, Thomas Paine raised the call for independence from Britain, for a democratic form of government based on equal rights for all, set the blueprint for the establishment of our Constitution and Bill of Rights. And whereas Thomas Paine supported the American Revolution through his moving essays, The American Crisis series, his personal service in the Army and in government office, and by the generous contribution of his personal funds, and whereas Thomas Paine was among the earliest writers publicly to denounce slavery and other human rights abuses, to advocate equal rights for women, to petition for improved wages and conditions for workers, to propound universal free education for all boys and girls, to propose progressive taxation, to call for government financial support for the needy and the elderly, to propose a startup stipend for young men and women, and whereas Thomas Paine recommended that neutral nations come together under a rainbow flag in order to avert the spread of conflicts and foster a spirit of world citizenship among peoples and nations, and whereas in his abundant writings Thomas Paine opposed not only political tyranny but also tyranny over thought, conscience, and expression, and whereas Thomas Paine's reasoned yet passionate writing set the course of America for democracy, and his life and work continue to encourage peoples the world over who seek liberty and democracy, and whereas in this year 2009, called Thomas Paine Year 2009, to mark the 200th anniversary of his death, it is fitting to express our gratitude anew and to offer fresh tribute to him for his abundant contributions. So this is a recognition of Thomas Paine in the 200th anniversary of his death, and, you know, kind of announcing Thomas Paine Year.
All right.
So
that's a great thing.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it mentions here that he was among the earliest people publicly to be. He was an abolitionist in 1770s. You know, he was women's rights, workers' rights. I mean, just amazing stuff that wouldn't really come into being for another 100 years or so in this country, or more.
Way ahead of his
way
time.
Way ahead of his time, exactly. Exactly.
So, but let's hear the tribute here for you guys.
So this,
what's the name of the song?
This one is called Tom Paine's Bones.
Tom Paine's Bones.
His bones were dug up 10 years after his death by William Cobbett and stolen and removed to England, where Mr. Cobbett promptly lost them.
His intention was to rebury them with honor in Tom Paine's native land.
Did he lose them on the way? I mean, it was a little
lost. It's quite a story. There's probably more than one book written about it, but there's a wonderful book that I read about it that you cannot believe the ins and outs of where these poor bones ended up.
It's called The Trouble with Tom.
Yes, it's a great book if anybody wants to look into it.
This is a song written by Graham Moore, who lives in Dorset in the south of England. I dreamed out one evening by a river of discontent. I bumped right into old Tom Paine as a running down the road he went. He said, I can't stop right now, my son. King George is after me. He'll have a rope around my throat and he'll hang me on the Liberty Tree. And I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. He said, I just spoke about freedom, justice for everyone. Ever since the very first word I spoke, I've been looking down the barrel of a gun. Well, they say I preach revolution. Let me say in my defense, all I did wherever I went was to talk a lot of common sense. And I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. Well, old Tom Paine, he ran so fast, he left me standing still. There I was, a piece of paper in my hand, standing at the top of the hill. And it said, this is the age of reason. These are the rights of man. Kick off religion and monarchy. It was written there in Tom Paine's plan. And I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. Old Tom Paine, there he lies. Nobody laughs, nobody cries. Where he's gone or how he fares, nobody knows and nobody cares. But I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones. I will dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance to Tom Paine's bones. Dance in the oldest boots I own to the rhythm of Tom Paine's bones.
Outstanding, yeah. All right.
Thank you.
What a beautiful voice you got there, Barbara.
Oh, thanks.
Very, very nice.
Thank
and Graham, you kept right up with her there, I tell you. That was good. Oh,
wow.
That is my role as an accompanist and a husband.
Yeah. Well, you did a great job. That was a beautiful song. It's a great song.
This guy, Graham Moore, writes wonderful songs about historical things that happen.
That lyric about dancing in the oldest boots I own.
Yeah,
right.
I love that. What a good idea.
It's an interesting...
And this last verse here is actually taken from the time.
Yeah.
Old Tom Paine, there he lies. There he lies. Nobody laughs, nobody cries. Where he's gone or how he fares, nobody knows, nobody cares.
That was actually published in a newspaper You know, he underwent a lot of
ridicule,
criticism, all
oh,
kinds of
yeah.
stuff in his lifetime. You know, including these hideous cartoons about him. He was a very misunderstood man.
I was reading Walt Whitman gave credit to him, but through someone that he knew, someone that knew Tom Paine, that
mm-hmm.
actually, you know, and he wrote in his he wrote a short essay.